Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy wherever they get their podcasts.
The Hancock International Endurance Series on RS1.
On RS1.
Part of the Radio Show Limited Network.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the glorious sight at the moment and soon to be sight and sound of, for me, one of the most evocative and interesting sessions of any motor race that runs into darkness. It's night practice, so there is some incentive for people to be out there, but it doesn't necessarily have the cut and thrust of racing. So it's something for everyone to enjoy, whether you're the team manager, particularly the drivers, and indeed, especially us who are watching, whether we're here at the circuit where the sun is plummeting towards the horizon. That picture, if you're watching now, is not speeded up. That is the speed that the Earth is rotating and the sun is therefore seemingly dropping below the horizon. At this time of year, it is spectacular. And I promise you, we have not done anything to that image. That is the situation at the moment. And it will be like turning a light switch off. The holy day traffic here in Kuwait, just beginning to build this Friday evening. We're at Kuwait Motor Town for the first of a triumvirate of race meetings that make up the Middle East portion of the Hancock Creventic 24 series. And we will crown a Middle East Championship winner at the end of Abu Dhabi at the penultimate weekend. of January next year. The light's already beginning to take effect. And remember, the sun was visible when we came on air, Phil Hanson, yep, a couple of minutes ago behind that 12HQ8 banner on the start finish line, or the rundown of turn two. Extraordinary at this time of year. It really is like someone's turned a dimmer switch down.
It is indeed. We do not get a twilight here because there's nothing in the atmosphere to bounce off. So it's really, really interesting. That sunset to our left. We're looking south across the circuit at the moment. The cars run from left to right underneath us, and that is the layout that we're faced with at the moment. As the beautiful lighting of all of this, the winter villages, yeah, winter tents, caravan parks in tents, literally, all throughout this region, as everybody.
The original meaning of caravan.
Yeah, exactly.
Just a set of travellers who come in. This is very traditional in this part of the area.
It is indeed, and we see it on the way from our hotel out to the circuit, and we see it off in the distance to our south at the moment. All the people enjoying the outdoors here on a chilly evening here in Kuwait. For the locals.
The sound that you hear next, dear viewer and listener, will be me hitting Phil Hanson across the head with something heavy. Unfortunately, I don't have very much at the moment. It's the last vestiges of the sunlight off to the west, and the light blue and Etruscan orange of, one might say, Gulf racing in this part of the world. Looks absolutely glorious. Joe Bradley is on duty to patrol the pits and paddock for us in this session, and he's down on the pit wall. Joe, good evening.
Well, it was a good term that you used, John, plummeted, because when I came out here only 5 minutes ago, there was an orange ball in the sky. It's completely disappeared now. The sun has gone down. It's just gone 5 p.m. Now, when you consider this race tomorrow, the 12 hours is going to finish towards 10 p.m. So that's about, well, almost 5 hours in darkness. So this nighttime session we've got now, 90 minutes of night practice, is going to be very important, because it's all about acclimatizing yourself, the drivers, that is, acclimatizing to the changes that the track takes on. Now, you might be thinking, what am I talking about? Well, I'll tell you what I'm talking about, because this track will look very different. All those reference points you've been building on over the course of this week's practice sessions are going to look very different when it turns dark. And, of course, the mechanics, the crews, they're going to work on the cars and get those lights working to perfection, because that's going to be vital when it turns dark here tomorrow night at the most, perhaps, arguably, the most crucial part of any long-distance race, the finish, because that's where it counts.
Joe Bradley down on the pit lane at RSL underscore studio. If you'd like to get in touch with us, many of you have already done that. Let me know where you are in the world, where you're listening or viewing, of course, because there will be many of you who have the live free video up either from the radio-show.uk link on the front page or indeed from YouTube or the 24hseries.com site, which is also where you will find live timing and scoring, and that will tell you at the moment that the cars are going out onto the track as we've had 4 minutes elapsed on the timing. Nobody really dashing out right at the very beginning. Now, if you weren't with us right at the start of our live broadcast earlier on when we had qualifying for you, there has been a change from last year to the layout of the circuit. We are down to, we've now decided, Phil and I officially have decided that there are 19 corners, not 20, as we had last year. Now, that might sound like, oh, you've just cut a corner off. Actually, we've cut quite a long loop out of the end of what was the Pentagon. It's now just a four-corner run. And then that runs into a hairpin, which is being termed T16A. There's a kink at turn 17 rather than the big long loop into 18. So 14, 15, 16, 16A, 17 and 18. So, but 16 and 16A too, so we've decided it's kind of like 19. Really.
Yes, it is indeed. Of that way, we basically reckon it's about 15 seconds a lap.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's a lot coming out of there because they've only got one braking zone now rather than two, because they had to brake at that second left-hander that put them onto the straight as well. So, yeah, it's a bit of a change. We heard from some of the drivers. Some of them think it's challenging. There isn't a lot of runoff there. We can see it quite clearly from our commentary box up in the top level of the grandstand. And we've been watching the cars through their free practice sessions of people just taking a bit too much speed into 15, where they still had last year had to keep going right, and they're trying how hard they can actually push through there now.
There was a lot of time to be made up in 15 last year, because if you could get that right and then straight line 16 and the entrance to 17, you could make up a lot of time there, and it was very easy to overbrake there and lose a bit of time. Now you are, I'd say right now, out of 14, you're back on the throttle. Rather than braking and trying to roll through 15, it's such an opened out corner now. And we'll keep an eye. If we stay with the onboard here of the Red Camel machine, which at the moment is being driven by Rick Breukers, he's just coming to the S's and heading through into that area of the circuit, flick through the S's, and then now he's into what would have been that long, just coming into that long area now. This is
12.
Turn 12 now. So now he's setting off. Now, this would have been five corners. The first three, you would have been holding on to the same amount of lock. But now he's going to open out the lock from this apex and go straight on. Yes. Oh, my goodness, he should have gone to the right there. He's gone off the track. No, he hasn't. This is 16A. Notice the banking on the inside of the corner. It's sort of a... It was described to me by the guys at CP Racing. And thank you, Joe, for that. As a 7/8 replica of the Caracciola carousel on the Nürburgring Nordschleife. It's obviously not as bumpy on the inside because that old circuit is concrete there and there's not as much room on the outside so that you can run all the way around. But it is very similar to that. And that was the perfect example there of a look at that new part of the circuit. We'll make sure you get another look at that before the end of the session. Joe Bradley down in the pit lane.
Yeah, I've got a little bit of a scientific method of keeping your driver a little bit cool, certainly cool in the head. Let's have a look at this, because I've never seen this technique of staying cool before. I'm gonna find out whether this is an actually tried and tested method. Now, it's been very hot here today, 25 degrees, but it's a little bit cooler now that the sun's gone down. But I'm sure that Freddie Tomlinson, who's supposed to be a Yorkshire lad, and a Yorkshire lad doesn't really need to stay cool in these temperatures, surely. But Freddie, I'm sorry to disturb your relaxation here. So does that work then? That cold bottle of water that you had on your head there, that you were very aggrieved when Jules knocked it off your head, is that keeping you cool?
Yeah, it's keeping me very cool, as in the heat here is just, it's so warm, so it's nice to keep your head cool with a bottle of water in the night.
It's too erratic on the steering wheel, Joe. So I'm trying a bit of, you know, meditating, calm himself down, composure. And see if it works. That's what it is.
This is Mike Simpson, by the way, who's part of the Ginetta family here. And Tomlinson is, of course, Freddie Tomlinson is the Ginetta family. So is that costing you time, what Mike's saying there about your erratic use of the steering? And you've been looking at data, you boys, haven't you?
Yeah, we've been looking at a bit of data after qualifying and then having a bit of a laugh as well. So we're just going for everything, and all these little things, they all add up. So anything you can do to help, is we'll try it all, basically.
Yeah, but I mean, Freddie, you've got to say, all right, it was hot this afternoon. It's going to be hot tomorrow. But it's gone a little bit cooler. You guys are going to be thankful for that this time tomorrow.
Yeah, it's obviously nice, because in the dark times, I think it's like 8 degrees cooler than it is during the day. So I think we're down to like 18, 16 degrees at the night. So it's relatively cool, which is just perfect for us, to be fair. Don't have to run with the AC at night, which should be nice.
Just tell everybody in Europe what that is. Did you hear that? It's dropping to 18 degrees. You poor things. Think of the torture we have to go through here, eh, Freddie?
Yeah, I know. It's just such a hard life.
Thanks, Freddie. I'll leave you to your meditation and work on that steering application, eh? Thanks, mate.
Frederick Tomlinson, Freddie Tomlinson. Tall as his dad, and starting out on his motor racing career. Joe Bradley there down in the pit lane. Michael Simpson, the other voice that you heard there. I should say, by the way, 20 degrees in air temperature, when you're in a car for any amount of time, but particularly when you're in the car for probably over an hour for a full stint, with your fireproof underlayer, then your three-layer Nomex, then your helmet, then your hands device. It's actually quite claustrophobic if you're not used to it. And you're also going to be a lot hotter than that outside temperature, because it's quite physical in the car, even though these cars have got power steering, but you're concentrating, you're being thrown around, your body is, you know, you're having to haul the steering wheel and all of that. Now, the Ginetta has got air conditioning, and it's a very clever bit of engineering, actually. And I only know this because I drove one many years ago. I raced one in their Super Cup at Rockingham Motor Speedway in the UK, and it is it fires up when you come off full throttle.
Oh,
so the air condition pump, if you will, doesn't take any power to drive it when you're full throttle. So it's only when you come off the throttle, so you're not losing even one brake horsepower. And when you lift off, you get this lovely blast of air.
Doesn't that encourage you to lift off more often?
Well, yes. Yes. Probably true. It was noticeable. I raced it, although it was a sprint championship, I was racing an early development version of the endurance car that Lawrence very kindly offered me a go in at on a British touring car event at Rockingham. It seems about a million years ago now. We'll stay with Ginetta and move to a different team. Welcome back to Colin White and CWS Racing. Some work going on that car, Joe.
Come across the CWS garage. Now, the garage door is down. which was a little bit perturbing because that usually is a sign of problems. However, we'll get our cameraman to come in and have a look and see what's going on here. The reason why the garage door is down is because they're using the garage door for headlight alignment. So they've got the car inside the garage, the headlights are on, and the team are working on aligning those headlights, and they're using the garage door to get them just right. And when the garage door goes up and the car goes out on track, the headlights will be pointing in the right direction.
I was the only one who did that on my back gates. You know, when I got... Absolutely. Park the car or the bike, and then what you also need, however, somebody to help you. So you need someone to stand in front of the left-hand headlight, then stand in front of the right-hand headlight, then you turn the additional lights on and have two people standing in front of the two headlights to get where the spread is. I've done all of that, and my long-suffering wife, the responsible adult Eve, has helped me out with that, particularly on the motorcycle when I got the additional lights on the motorcycle and put those on. Actually, it's a job I've not done yet on the 968 since I've got the 968 Sport back. And they need doing because the fog lights and the driving lights move within the pod that they're in. And they've been out recently to get covered so that they don't get stone chipped. So they've got sort of clear PPF on them. And I just need to tweak them a little bit for winter driving back in the UK. So, yeah, very good. Like that, Colin. That is Colin White up and down and side to side, to be quite often. That's exactly what you would expect from Colin. You're not going to pack a set of headlight aligners that you like to use for your MOT, so just shine them on the garage door.
Just work out where the track goes the most and then tweak
that point
where you need. Now, this circuit, and I described this last year, the apexes are quite reflective. So if you have corner lighting, and I'm looking at turn 14 at the moment, and if you have corner lighting, that the two lights that you can see on some of the cars that are pointed outwards that don't give you any straight light, but it's actually for registration of where the corner is, because obviously you've got lots of things to do inside the car. The track's been very well designed with the white curbs so that you can actually pick that up out of your peripheral while you're coming down into a corner, changing down gears, battling with opposition, and it gives you a good reference point. I had a chat to one of the drivers about it last year, and he said it was really noticeable here that it wasn't the dark red curbs that you can't see. So it's there for the advantage, and as Joe said, we're going to have around about 5/12 of this race in darkness. So, it's a little under halfway we're going to be running in these conditions. And as we discussed last year, the track lighting here is actually really nice. It's not gas level. It's not a daylight level.
It's not
level.
Meant to be.
Exactly. It's there that you have to use your headlights, but you're also getting a little bit of assistance. And it just makes it a little safer, but, it's fantastic. I love it.
The brightest part is on the front straight,
yes,
because there is additional flood lighting on, and we're right underneath the cantilever roof of this lovely main grandstand, and that's where the EB Motors car is at the moment. And also in the pit lane we've got the KTM Crossbow, which was significantly unexpectedly disassembled,
yes,
out on the circuit.
Rapid unscheduled disassembly, think it was called.
Yeah. However, it was very nicely scheduled, reassembled,
yes,
perhaps not quite as rapidly, and it looks absolutely immaculate in those red, white and black colours. The mechanics at the moment just spinning the right front wheel as if there's... I'd say something was catching there, because that's not spinning easily.
It's not free, is it?
No.
No.
It's not rotating as they might want to. This is the Razoon Morvand team, who were such great sports last year, replaced the engine and managed to make the end of the race after an in-race conflagration. It's a little bit of a colour change on the car, still running that red, white and black. There's a little more white. I like the white swoosh and I like the black key lines on that car. They've used the body panel shape of that car nicely. Very nicely.
Yeah. Hathik Parajuli, the local Kuwaiti racer on board that car at the moment, he was the one where the car caught fire, where the parts of the engine decided to leave the engine block.
Yes.
And he had the common sense and the knowledge to come in to the penalty box. And the penalty box was the first place he saw the fire extinguishers that could help him. So having a car on fire and having the presence of mind to know where to stop, which is an amazing, amazing for the driver who was in the car, just to understand how quick they could get stuff done and get it fixed. But it was a fantastic race for those guys last year until that they broke up. But they ended up winning the Middle East Trophy for the GTX category.
Let's find out what the problem is. We've been speculating that there's something catching at the front. Joe Bradley is there with one of the team members.
Well, the 714 crossbow we've just been describing. Daniel Drexel I've got with me, as and Daniel's one of the drivers. And Daniel's going to give us hopefully a full report, Daniel. It's just, I mean, just yesterday the car was literally in bits out the back of the garage. Your guys were compiling the bits and just seeing what exactly they were, because they didn't look like bits from the car. It was literally smashed to smithereens, wasn't it?
Yeah, so Dominic was driving, and at the end of the long straight, there was a tire failure. He hit the barrier really, really hard. I think it was over 200 kph. So the car was basically snapped in half. All of the rear was done. And we basically put everything of the rear off and everything on again. And now it's a drivable car. We are lucky that it is this car, because a Porsche or a BMW, it's chassis and you wouldn't repair it, and it was like it was the rear. So the monocoque is completely fine, the chassis is fine, and we can still race.
How long did the crew take to repair the car? How long in total?
Yeah, they had another delay because we had to fly in a guy with some spare parts too. We had some small things, but I think it was 4 a.m. or something, so it was a really, really long shift.
Great job. And you were saying your colleague is fine?
Yeah, he's okay. He won't drive today and tomorrow, so we are only a team of three now, but he's okay. He's just standing that bike there, so...
where is he? Is he around?
There he is with the mechanics just looking at the brakes.
All right, so he's taking an interest still. Sorry, who was driving? Remind me.
Dominic is the team crew chief, so he...
remind me of his surname. It's Dominic...
Albert.
Albert, that's the one. So let's get a word with Dominic and we'll find... Which one is Dominic?
The one without the suit.
That guy there.
Yeah.
Right. Bear with me. Dominic, come and tell us. Your teammate, Daniel Drexel, said you were all right.
Yeah,
I want to prove to our viewers that you were all right after that big, big shunt.
Yeah. It was a big one, so yeah.
How are you feeling? Are you okay?
It's good. I have a lot of headache, but I'm fine, but I'm not allowed to race, which is okay. It makes sense.
It's unfortunate, isn't it? Yes. You must be very frustrated.
Yeah, it's not what I accepted or hoped for that weekend, but it is as it is. Sometimes it's quite sad in the sport, but good thing is my teammates had more driving time tomorrow.
Yeah, now you put your crew chief hat back on, and tell us what's the problem with the car at the moment.
Right now we have some vibrations right front, and we're just checking. So as soon as we know what's the problem, then we will change and go out again.
Is there any thoughts that was that problem on the front end is caused by what happened to the rear end in the crash?
We didn't know exactly. That's the status right now. So.
Okay, Dominic, I'm so happy to see you're on your feet after that. You scared everyone, but it's great to see you. No doubt we'll talk to you across the weekend and throughout the 12 hours. Yep.
Thank you. Bye.
Yeah, good to see him back in the pit lane. 200 kilometres an hour, that's somewhere akin to 120 miles an hour. Now, in the context of how fast the cars do get up to here, that isn't maximum speed. However, that is a significant impact, and it was such a significant impact that it took the shot, well, probably about 2 hours to sort out the barriers towards the first proper corner, which is actually turn two. And it was that was a big, big impact. Indeed, and echo everything that's been said there, because the KTM crossbow, yes, of course, it is a road car, but the the GTX version of that car is very much, I mean, the whole car is designed with racing in mind because they have their own series. And it is designed with principles of motor racing. So the corners, the suspension arms, etc., etc., are all designed to break and be replaced. Even so, that was a big shunt. Yep. And I'm very pleased to see how that KTM crossbow looked after its occupant.
Yeah, the bits that are supposed to break off broke off.
Yeah.
And it reduced the mass.
That's dissipation of energy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it reduces the mass and then it doesn't become such a big accident as it worried us yesterday. It really did. And I'm so glad that
we
Dominic's
saw the
okay.
aftermath
yes.
of it. Yeah. We heard about the incident and we saw the cleanup going on and we saw the car. And it was quite worrying. And it's good to see that we've got everybody back in the pit lane after that one. And great work by Razoon Morvan to get that car back on the track. It is night practice. We are live from trackside here at Kuwait Motor Town. Full dark now. Yeah. And once again, the technology that is current AV and broadcast camera technology making it look far lighter on the monitors and therefore what you're seeing at home than it is actually out of the window. That's an extraordinary feat of clarity. And thank you to, first of all, our camera operators here from O221, but also all the technicians and production staff racking the cameras in the right way. That's the technical term. So that you effectively open up the iris of a digital camera. It's not quite like it used to be when I first picked up the camera, but it has the same effect. And doing a cracking job. So evocative, these pictures. Now, we were talking about the Razoon Morvan team, and just before we go back down to the pit lane, GMC BMW in trouble at the moment. That car pulling to a halt. This is the 438 and has come to a dead stop, just heading back onto the penultimate, the run down to the final corner, should I say.
Yep.
So effectively coming out of that new section of the track that we didn't use last year. So it's the AGMC Racing by Timpson. It's Vasily Vladkin behind the wheel of that car. Now, he's still got power, but I'm not sure he's got forward motion. He's got electrical power. This might bring out a code 60. Oh, no, hang on. Has he done the Control-Alt-Delete? I haven't seen anything flash off and flash on again. But that car, spectacularly, we have got a full code 60 now, shining spectacularly under the lights. It's got no damage. There's a flashing light on the front of the car, which is the positional indicator. Stand by, Joe. I'll come back to you in a second once we see what's happened here. We might have to do a quick snatch of that vehicle. And there is a pickup truck not too far away on the other part of the circuit. That is another advantage of not using the run down to what would have been 17 and 18. It means we can park some intervention vehicles there. If you're unused to Kreventic 24H Series Hankook Racing, Code 60 is a very old concept that this series, along with Dutch supercars and one or two others, have been running for many, many years. Its closest relative in international racing would be virtual safety car, or it's often called full course yellow in the WEC. And here's one of the sparkling new rescue vehicles from Kuwait Motor Town, resplendent with its new K logo, which is made up of three brush strokes, three petals on there.
Very nice looking all over the circuit on the big one down in front of us as well.
I think that'll flat toe actually.
It looked like he's lost drive because he engaged first gear and then it just it bit and then he had nothing else. So he's either got a driveline problem or he's got something a little bit more
they
serious.
They haven't run it out of fuel, have they? Not this early on in the session, surely. They might have been trying to see how far they could go. It's not unheard of, but I would have thought they would have done that at the end rather than the beginning. Clearly still got full electrical power, so it's not as if that's an issue. But I think this is just going to be get the tow strap on it and drag it back around. Where the car is on the last straight running down to the final corner, and that's where pit lane entrance is on the far side of that, on the right-hand side. That looks like that's going to happen fairly easily, and we'll get back to full green shortly. So, before we do that, let's nip down to Joe Bradley in the pit lane. We were talking about the Razoo More Than team, and Joe has caught up with one of the other local teams here at Kuwaiti Motor Temp.
Yeah, Rabdan Racing, we've met before here in the Middle East, but they're joined by Fulgenzi, who's one of their drivers, to give him his full name, Enrico Fernando Fulgenzi. The other drivers in the team, Saf Alameni and Christopher Zockling here, who's not standing on a box, it's just he's really tall. Christopher, it's great to see you back here in the Kreventic series. You guys have been a big miss. But you've also, there's a bit of a stat here. Your Porsche is numbered 971. Now, what's the significance of that?
Well, 971 is the country prefix for the UAE, so the country code when you dial a phone number. That's the prefix.
I like that. Tell us a bit about your week so far. You've had a massive amount of track time already here in Kuwait.
Yeah, and I mean, first of all, the track is absolutely beautiful. It's the first time for me personally racing here, and the track is phenomenal. It's super high speed, super flowy, and what they've done over here with some of the corners that they implemented, especially the new left-hander that they have at turn 16, is super flowy, super nice. It's quite banked as well. It's awesome.
I mean, Christopher, you've got a lot of experience with these GT cars on a lot of tracks all over the world. Where would you rate this Kuwait Motor City?
I always said when people ask me what my favorite circuit is, I would say Silverstone in the UK, and it's got a very similar flow to it because it's quite flat, quite high speed. It's just, it's great for racing, actually, because the circuit is quite wide as well, so it allows for a lot of overtaking opportunities, so I think it's definitely my top five.
Yeah, and so this one's in your top five?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, now that's quite an accolade, isn't it? I mean, and for a first few, how do you think it's going to race, though? Because it's quite a different proposition, isn't it, racing and just running around the track, going round and round.
Yeah, but like I said, I mean, we've got quite a few different classes over here, so overtaking shouldn't be an issue, and I think it fits quite well into the Dubai and Abu Dhabi calendar as well, because it's somewhat similar in terms of the space it gives you in terms of overtaking other slower or faster car categories. So I think in terms of racing action, especially at night, it should be great.
And, all right, we've got a small grid of 992 Porsches, but that kind of, I think, that adds a little bit more pressure because you can see exactly who you're racing with all the time.
Totally, and of course in qualifying there's no excuse for traffic, you know, because there's such few your cars on the track, you really got to put it together. But no, we're starting second tomorrow on the grid, so we still don't know the exact starting routine, as in who's going to take the start, but it's going to be a good one. But like you said, with the only, you know, only four cars in our class, it's going to be a tough one because you really can't afford to make a mistake. You got to keep the rhythm going and you got to maintain your consistency. So let's see.
What have you got planned for 2024? I know you've come over from Europe, but what's Christopher Zockling got in the plans for next year?
Well, first of all, we're going to continue the Middle East Trophy, so you're going to see us together with Saif Alameri in the 24-hour Dubai race and then the 6-hour Abu Dhabi race. But the other plans are to be racing a GT World Challenge, but in a different manufacturer.
Okay, seeing as you're driving a Porsche here, we'll not mention who that is quite yet. You still got your Porsche cap on. Thanks for talking to us, Chris, as ever.
Thank you so much, and enjoy.
Yeah, we will. Christopher Zirkling there for Rabdan Motorsport. Seeing when he said 971 and Porsche, all I could think about was the original Panamera.
Yes, true.
971. The 97. Is it 972 or 973 now? It's just been launched. You were doing the launch recently out here, weren't you? As the BMW, by the way, has been towed back to the
back
pit
to green.
Yeah, we are back to full green.
Indeed. Six laps completed by the 4:38 before it had to get towed into the pits. Joe will have a look into that to see if he can't help them with the repairs.
He'll be there.
He'll be there, indeed. And it is our Century Motorsport in the BMW M4 GT3 with 11 laps so far. Just clicked over the first 30 minutes of this 90-minute session.
See, as soon as I saw that, I said what I just said about Panamera. I knew I was slightly wrong. 971 was the second version of Peter Varga's wonderful sports GT Tourer design, and it is indeed the new one is coming out shortly. Although disaster, as far as I'm concerned, they're losing the wagon. The Sport Turismo
will be no more.
Not
happening.
That's
my favourite car.
Yeah, not in the new version, mate. So
no, not happening.
971 will be the last one. I drove coast to coast a couple of years ago in a Panamera 4-litre twin turbo hybrid. And I have to say, it is one of the most competent things I have ever had, and still did 40 miles to the gallon. Right, and not that you buy a Porsche for its fuel mileage, of course. Resplendent in white with the black accoutrements on the flared arches. The number 795 is the Ginetta, and that is the Tomlinson's car, in every sense of the word.
All of them, yes.
Well. Indeed. Lawrence Tomlinson, LNT, behind the wheel of the Toro Verde G56 Cup car.
It doesn't sound like any G56 Cup car that I have ever heard.
I don't know what they've... we'll have to ask Lawrence or Freddie, actually, if there is something different with the exhaust. That's the V6 car. There is a V8 version of that car as well, which has a different nomenclature, which is built as effectively a GT4 car. Absolutely stunning. But that V6 is an absolute screamer when it goes by. Here's another car that we're going to be seeing and hearing a lot of in the next few months. The brand new Vortex 2.0. So new, it's still in its bare carbon fibre. Oh, look away, look away. It's not wearing any clothes. I think that carbon fibre, plain carbon fibre race cars look absolutely tremendous.
They are Darth Vader.
They are, yeah, they very are. True. Stealth. This is, according to Vortex and to the team, this is everything they have learned so far going into a new car, still with the awesome V8 sound and KTM crossbore on the pit lane exit there. Just coming out of the pits has come to a halt.
He's good. He's underway.
Good, excellent. That is the Razoon More Than Crossbow, the 714. And I think it's Arthur.
Yes, Arthur. Yeah.
At the wheel of that.
Sober.
I'll see you in a moment when they come through. Third position. The grid was set earlier on. CP Racing will take pole position. But in a compact 14 car grid, really, that will count for nothing. It is a continuous race. We will be going straight through the 12 hours here tomorrow. Make sure you join us for every minute. And, of course, we'll be unleashing Nick Damon on the grid for his unmissable pit walk. Other broadcasters, take note. There is only one Nick Damon's pit walk. There is nothing like it in any other motorsport broadcast. Many of you might say thank goodness for that, but not us.
No, not us.
We love it. You cannot fault his enthusiasm, his verve, his sometimes overly dramatic style, but we like it.
We do.
We love you, Nick.
And he's going to get to do his first one at Yas.
Oh,
for the 6 hour.
He's not done one there before, has
he? Because Seb's had to bend down a lot to get me in frame.
Yeah.
And now it'll be back to normal for him.
Yeah, good point. Seb, our intrepid cameraman.
Das
Camera Machine, as we call him. And
it's looking like a fairly large grid down there at Yas as well.
Already more than 50.
Exactly.
For Yas, by far the biggest grid that Krivendik will have presented there. Before that, 1 week before that, middle of January, it's our traditional start to the motorsport, international motorsport year, with the 24 hours at Dubai Autodrome.
19th running of that.
Is it?
Yes.
Right. Joe Bradley down on the pit lane again as we've got a bit of side-by-side action. BMW and Porsche coming to the final corner. And it is the number 22 Century Motorsport car with Lewis Plato at the lee who gets to the apex of the final corner first. If I look left out of our window, I will see his headlights coming towards us. 001 on the windscreen means that's the car is the quickest at the moment, and that is the quickest lap, a 144.737. We'll digest that while Joe brings us another interview from the lane.
Well, the quickest car out there in night practice is the 22 Century Motorsport BMW. Lewis Plato's the driver, but his teammate here, Jack Barlow, a name I remember from a very nasty shunt at Thruxton. And bizarrely, I remembered it all, which is a really, really scary thing. Jack, I remember you were in a jam on Formula Ford. It was a very nasty accident at Thruxton that sort of finished your career, as you've just been telling me. This is your first race since that Formula Ford accident.
Yeah, so, well, it's been, 9 years since then now. I did try and get back into racing pretty much immediately after that, towards the end of the year after I recovered. But unfortunately, lack of finances and things, we struggled really. But yeah, it's pretty much 9 years on from then. We're back in a race car and out in Q8. A little bit different from the 30-minute races, 20-minute races back then to now, obviously a 12-hour. So a lot to learn and enjoying the process at the moment.
Yeah, Snetton's a little bit different at this time of year, isn't it, than Q8. So is this the route that you want to come back to? You know, a little bit sort of endurance racing?
Yeah, 100%. Obviously, racing has evolved a lot since I was in it. I remember back when I was looking at GT3 back then and thinking how I would love to do that one day. I mean, the cars have evolved so much. So, I mean, yeah, GT racing is obviously a passion of mine at the moment. It's something I've taken a big interest in. And look, it's one of those things that's open to people like me that have been out of racing for a long time and am drivers and things like that. They want to get into racing as a hobby and things. So there's a lot more potential and opportunity in GT racing across the world, that is. So, yeah, it's definitely something I'm hoping to do a bit more of in the future.
Now, the other drivers in your car, Carl Cavers and Lewis Plato, they've been doing the British GT Championship together. So you're having to integrate into kind of a marriage, aren't you? You're the gooseberry, if you like.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I remember Lewis from 14 years ago. So it's been a long time since me and him have kind of bumped heads and clash heads, are we saying? Obviously, now we're teammates. And, yeah, obviously, he's obviously been racing consistently for as long as I can remember, and I'm learning a lot from him. Yeah. And Carl is a really quick am. Carl's done an amazing job, and I'm sure that he's going to be one to watch, especially in the near future. I mean, those boys are committed to doing British GT again, stepping up to the GT3 class. Obviously, it's Carl's car that we're racing this weekend, so yeah, one to watch for sure, those boys.
Now, Jack, girls, you may recognise his face, but if I could get him to take his shirt off, you might recognise Jack Barlow here, because in the 9 years he's not been motor racing, Jack here was a contestant on Love Island. Before I go on, I've never seen an episode of Love Island. I've just been doing my research. So what was that all about then? How long ago was that?
So that was 2 years ago now. COVID done some weird and wonderful things when we were sitting at home doing nothing. It was quite a surreal experience, to be honest. Short-lived. I wasn't there too long. Racing is definitely where I'd much rather be. But nonetheless, it's a life experience, and it was one to tell the grandkids for sure. So,
well, we've got it on TV. It's all still there. What I want to ask you, though, exposing yourself, as a personal profile, are you finding that at all useful in sort of, you know, you've. I don't know how many Instagram followers you have, but, you know, those people on Love Island, you know, it's all about that. Does that help you, perhaps, in getting back into motor racing with that sort of exposure?
Well, look, any reality TV can help anybody's profile. It kind of gets your name out there a little bit more for whatever reason. For me personally, I kind of stepped away from that kind of lifestyle, and to be honest, I was my TV stint in the reality side of things was very short-lived. Yeah. So for me personally, no, but nonetheless there is a lot of opportunities that can come of it for some people, but unfortunately it hasn't helped me gain hundreds of thousands of pounds to go racing, so still a very, very expensive hobby that I'm choosing here. So
okay, Jack, great to speak to you, mate. Your car is in, so I'll leave you to get back to work. You might have to put a helmet on next.
Yes.
Great to talk to you, Jack Barlow.
I was wondering where he was going with that exposure comment there.
I had my hand on the red button.
Reality TV star. there, and Jack Baldwin. Joe Bradley, our own reality TV star. Some interesting comments there. I would have thought that nearly a decade ago, I think Jack did a couple of tests in GT3s. Not far behind. So this GT BMW, the GT3 M4 BMW that he's getting into now with Century Motorsport, that is going to feel very different from those GT3 cars, which were mildly modified road cars back in those days. They are purpose-built race cars nowadays at GT3. And they, I mean, let's not forget, in the World Championship, in the World Endurance Championship next year, the GT Formula is GT3.
Yes.
At Le Mans next year, the GT Formula is GT3. That's how far they have come from dragging a car off the production line, throwing a cage in it and some slicks at it, which is, I'm slightly exaggerating there, but not that much. And certainly the early GT4 cars were exactly that. Whilst Joe was talking to Jack there, his teammate came in the pit lane. And in fact, he's gone for fuel, which is something else we need to talk about.
Yes.
Because you don't fuel in the pit lane here. Had a couple of messages at RSL underscore studio about our pit lane reporters not wearing fireproofs in the pit lane. Don't need to, because there is no fueling in the pit lane. There's a completely separate fueling area at pit out. And that's where the number 22 BMW is right now. Also, we have a new fastest lap to talk about in this night practice. Sabino De Castro in the Manamari engine energy by EB Motors. Number 95 Porsche by about 0.2 of a second, just under. This is the number 95 car, the multicoloured machine. It's Lewis Plato's time that still puts the Century Motorsport Beamer in second. And then the Mercedes-AMG GT3 Evo of CP Racing. Joe Foster's just taking that car out. He's about another couple of seconds further back. In the 992 category, K Kramer Racing. Mori Krantz out in the 936 ahead of Rabdan by Fulgazi, the 971 car. And it is Enrico Fernando Fulgenzi behind the wheel of that car. In fact, as I say that, he dives into the pit lane. 438 is our leader in GT4, the AGMC Racing team by Simpson. That was the car that had the problem earlier on, and it's running fine again. Fabien Defieux is behind the wheel of that GT4 version of the G82. So that is the newest shape of the car. It was the F car before that. As you go through the alphabet, the cars get newer.
That's what I was going to ask you about that one, because we've seen that the second car, and that one is the Century Motorsport. Now, remember last year they ran the Aston Martin here in GT4.
Yes.
Okay, so this year they've got two cars. They've got GT3 and GT4 covered. So they've increased their commitment to this race by 50%.
Very good.
Yes.
Yeah.
And changing from the Aston Martin to the BMW and having the GT3 and GT4 BMW.
It's a very distinctive car, that 438 AGMC Racing team by Simpson, with the light blue, almost a teal blue, and then the very bright swooshes of colour on that. Phil and I have been around enough, and in fact, Joe and Nick have been around enough to where customer race cars were almost always a single colour,
yes.
And if they were Porsches, they were almost always just white. It was called Carrera White,
yes.
And that is still a colour you can get. It's a non-metallic white, and basically, that it's called Carrera White because that's the colour that all the race cars came out of Weissach in. Nowadays, they come out in GT Silver, all the Porsche Cup cars, which the name of the colour tells its own story.
It does.
But thank heavens for the development of wraps and also film paint as well, very thin film paint, like aero paint.
Yep.
We see a lot of that in in the US. It means the livery designers can go wild. And hello to Andy Blackmore, by the way.
Yes.
One such livery designer who's been doing sterling work recently. Already working on 2024, where he'll probably have about half of the IMSA grid. And hello to everybody who's listening at IMSA testing, by the way. It's not open to the public, but I know, for example, John De Geest is there, the founder and managing editor of Sportscar 365. Jamie Price was photographing it up until yesterday. Today, the GT cars have joined the GTP cars out on the road circuit at Daytona. So hello to everybody who's listening there, and thank you for your kind comments about our IMSA announcement on Wednesday. All of you were
fantastic
there.
News.
Thank you very much for that. A lot of hard work from the responsible adult, and a lot of thanks to our IMSA partners for that one. And also thank you to David Pettit of IMSA for his hard work on getting that one across the line. So plenty of racing to come next year, but we've still got to round up 2023 a little bit later, 2 weekends later than we were last year. And still enjoying some fantastic weather. Somebody asked me the other day, Phil. Said, all right, you'll be finished now for the season? No, still got another race to go. Really? Yes, but then you'll be finished till when? Well, in the old days, this is where Hindhoff sounds like the cranky old bloke that he's become. But in the old days, you would finish in probably end of September, maybe the beginning of October, your European season, and you wouldn't normally get back to work till probably Easter weekend, so sometime around about April time. And now, from now until the end of February, it's one of our busiest times.
As it has evolved.
Yes.
Remember, we started off 2006 with just one race in the region.
Correct.
And then it kept on growing and growing and getting bigger. As we get into the 19th evolution of the 24 Hours of Dubai, coming up in January, and that race has grown as well.
What has that exposure done for motorsport in the region? We were talking about the nascent motorsport culture that we have here in Kuwait, but it actually didn't take that long in Dubai. You're talking about 20 years, which in motorsport is nothing. But you look at Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Qatar, Bahrain,
KSA.
Absolutely. Saudi Arabia, just up the road here. What has that done to change people's knowledge and to change their appreciation of motorsport?
What I look at is the beginnings, the junior categories, oversubscribed karting grids.
Yeah.
Okay, in both Rotax and IAMI. Okay. We're seeing people start F4 UAE here. We've got two of them on the current Formula One grid. Logan Sargeant and Oscar Piastri started here in 2016 in F4 UAE. So two of them have taken the FIA's single-seater ladders from F4, F3, F2, and they're in F1 now. They get so many races here because we do our F4 series, and it comes here to Kuwait Motor Town as well. It'll be the Middle East series next year because it'll be going to KSA, it'll be at Bahrain, everywhere else. So that itself, 40 plus cars on the grid.
How many?
40 plus. Oversubscribed once.
So that's a full, that is literally full to bursting point.
We're at track capacity at some of them. Remember last year when we had the support race, they had to move the start line down because there were cars going around the corner.
That's right.
They had to put a secondary start halfway down the pits.
Yeah.
So we're seeing that evolution and all the hard work for those, all of those people from 2010 onwards. That, and where I was a part of the driving force as the ATCIE, which is now EMSO, the governing body of getting people into motorsport. We had at the Formula One Grand Prix, we had our first ever F4 UAE, which was a trophy race. The entire stewards panel was made up of females. First time ever. Okay, two of them ex-racers. One of them raced at Le Mans in the karting, at the karting in Le Mans. Mm-hmm. So, where the whole sport in this region is evolving from administration and then into activation. And I think that's what's done this. And, of course, you've got KSA coming on board. Qatar now with running everything. They had MotoGP, WEC, Formula One. It's got everything, you know. So, the elephant is the room. In the room is there is a lot of money here. Okay,
yes.
That is the elephant in the room. But they're putting it in the right directions. When I talk with Almaro Ahmed, who is head of the QMMF, over there, in 6 months they rebuilt that entire pit complex because it was only built for MotoGP, so they were very narrow. They just built the whole thing. It's like a shopping mall in behind the pits there now.
Yeah.
So we come to a circuit like this in Kuwait Motor Town. I mean, it's a stunning track to drive. We're hearing it from the drivers. They really enjoy it. It's wide. You've got overtaking opportunities. They've done the right thing.
Yeah, totally. And it will continue to happen. And, you know, because you're the voice of Formula One round here, not so... 20 years ago, if you'd put Formula One on television round here, the only people who would have been watching it would have been...
Expats
from Europe.
Yep.
Now
it's 22 million listeners on the English channel.
Well,
for the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix.
Wow. Unbelievable.
There's 90 million people in KSA. That's what a lot of people don't
know. So that's nearly a third, though, of everybody.
Yes.
On the English channel. Wow.
You heard it here from Khalid Al-Madaf.
Yeah.
You know, when we came in yesterday. They're passionate about it. And they enjoy it.
And that wouldn't have happened, even if that had been available 15, 20 years ago. It's the fact that it's here in this region.
Yes.
And people see it and are exposed to it. And... even if they can't afford to race cars, they might know someone. And one thing that has exploded in this region is local officials.
Yes.
Whether it's flag marshals, whether it's people in race control. But that's gone from literally a standing start to be able to be self-sufficient in under a generation.
We go to other countries now.
It's extraordinary.
You know, we go to Baku.
Yeah.
You know, and we go to those other places because... And I've got to say, thanks to the BARDC who came out and did a lot of training in the beginning of that. They were brilliant. They were brilliant. And they helped us for probably the first 10 years that we used to have our Orange Army come out from the UK. And we've had guys come out from the States as well. And look around us here. Yeah, it's really, really good to see the marshals coming back to here.
Already down to just over half an hour to go. Full race speed pit stop practice is going on here in night practice. A couple of moments ago, it was the Jordan Red Camel Porsche Cup car that was in the pit lane and very quickly out again. The two Breukers brothers swapping over, and that was Luke, I think, that was getting in. Vortex is out on the track at the moment. We'll get a look at that when it next comes in to the pit lane. This is a substantially different car from what we've seen in the past. I said they'd learned everything about it. This is Arno and Olivier Gomez, who are founders and team managers at Vortex. The biggest thing is this is an all carbon fiber tub.
Now the other one was fiberglass.
No, it was steel tubes with fiberglass and carbon reinforced over the top of it. But this is full carbon fibre in terms of the chassis. Brand new aerodynamics. You'll see the sort of step sides on the car where the numbers are. It's in carbon fibre at the moment, so it's not that easy to pick out the proportions of the car. New carbon chassis, new aerodynamics. They are looking to make further improvements on this car as we head towards Dubai. It has still got the big V8 engine.
I love that.
It's longer and wider than the car it replaces, and it's had a lot more work put into it. We'll talk more about it. And they, of course, are defending their championship in the 24H series by Hankook, the GTX Teams Championship.
It's got a lot of almost LMP type
very much
body work, and the way that the air flows through inside the rear wheel arch.
They're working. This is still a development period for this car. It has the new Vortex 2.0 on it in its carbon fiber and the racing stripes. There's a few details still to be finalized before they're ready to sell them on.
Yep.
But they are saying to us, they haven't written a price down in stone at the moment, but they're saying it will be less expensive than a GT3 car.
Wow.
And I mean, that's a sexy looking beast, isn't it?
That is...
And there's no doubt it's a race car.
Most definitely. You can't confuse that.
No.
And it's got glowing red exhausts.
They're also looking to make it as drivable as possible for gentlemen drivers. Joe Bradley is down in the pit lane and can give us some more news from this evening session, which still has 32 minutes to go.
So I've wandered into the AC Motorsport, the Audi pit. That's the number 138 Audi RS3. Now, a little bit of news. Ricky Coomber's had to pull out through to a medical issue. We haven't got much more than dizzy spells for Ricky, so he's had to pull out. However, his teammate here isn't James Kitt. Neither is it Fabian Dufour. In here, we've got Jack Lemmer, who's in the 138. Now, Jack's lost luggage is somewhere between London and Q8, I would imagine. I'm not going to talk to Jack quite now because he's about to get in the car. But it was very, very confusing to walk in here and see two James Kays. Best of luck for tomorrow when your luggage turns up, Jack. We're big fans of Barwell Motorsport as well. We look forward to seeing you in one of your dad's Lamborghinis, eh?
Hopefully soon.
Yeah, exactly. So Jack's going to get in the car soon, so we're going to leave him to that. Oh, the biggest thing, Seb, get this one. He's borrowed the boots as well. Look at that. There's not a toy in sight.
So debuting the Alpine Star steel cap racing footwear there as the not inconsiderable mass of Joe Bradley was on there. Always, spin for CP, unusual.
Very unusual.
Half an hour to go. That at the moment being driven by Charles Esplanade.
Yeah, indeed.
Behind the wheel of that. If you're a racing driver going to a track, the only two things that I think you really need to have with you is your helmet and your underwear.
Yeah, and
everything else you can borrow or buy.
Yes, true. Carry on luggage only.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you can hand carry a helmet, if you pack very lightly, I can tell you from personal experience that you can get a helmet, a race suit, and all your and two pairs of underwear actually, and balaclavas, and your boots, your gloves, and your hands device. Plus your clothes for a week and your wash kit, your normal clothes, you can get that on hand luggage.
Okay, I couldn't get my I couldn't get my cool suit icebox in there. That would be my biggest issue.
No.
I used to race here. Obviously, we used to finish in May, and it was 42 degrees outside temperature, 60 plus inside my Clio Cup car, and I had to have a full cool suit running in there. On one race, it failed. And then it was like having... I had to pit. I couldn't
cool suits are great when they work.
Yes.
When they're not, they effectively gently simmer you in warm water.
V8 supercars in Australia have a big issue with that at the moment. And, you have to box.
Hello to Adam Mitchell, who's enjoying our coverage here. Adam, who is... splits his time, according to his profile, between Reading and London in the UK. Or maybe he's just reading in London. hello there, Adam. Thank you for giving us your most precious gift, that of your time. In the pit lane, in fact, in the garage at the moment, Keir Kramer Racing's Porsche number 937, which looks like it's going to get a new set of Porsche brake discs on the front end, or have they already done it? That was a torque wrench you'd hand there. This is the... very nice red and black 992 Cup car. Actually, what we've got there is a set of match discs and pads,
yes.
Mr. Bradley, who is on site for that. And they were working on some of the reservoirs under the front end of that. Rear Full rear engine car, of course, still the 992 Cup car. Bradders is there at the moment and might be able to give us a little technical update. Bradders, what was going on there? Was that bleeding the brake fluid after they've done a brake pad and disc change?
You're spot on, because if Seb shows us what's on the ground here, there's still quite a bit of heat coming from these discs and pads, and you were exactly right. What they're doing is they're matching the pads, they're bedding them in, and they're using the 937 and the sister 936 for that very job. So we're needing to prepare for a 12-hour race with two Porsches, not just one. And we've just had this brake set come off, and literally my hand's about, what, two feet away from it, and I can feel the heat coming up. And the reason why they're at the reservoir is because they press the caliper back. Now, the man in charge, who is Carsten Kramer, is with us, and he can give us the story. You came here with one car, Carsten, and then you decided, what, we've got another one in the truck, we might as well enter two. Is that the story?
Yes, we're addicted to racing. Yes.
Correct. Does that help with regards to perhaps lifting an overall trophy?
Say again, sorry.
Does that help with regards to winning the race overall? With two, that is.
No, we will use the second car to get some practice also for Dubai. And so maybe we will retire, but maybe we drive the race to the end. We will see.
Yeah. All right, I see. So that the second car may not be raced the full 12 hours. It's just a bit of a test session.
Yes, correct. Exactly. Yeah.
So is it the same driver lineup in both cars?
We have three drivers, which are the same. Yeah, it's Michele Di Martino, Self, and me. On this car as well, yeah.
So what are you going to do if the additional car is doing better in the race? Are you going to keep it out there?
Oh, yes, maybe then we keep it, yeah.
I was just speculating there about the brakes. I mean, all right, I've been around racing cars a while. Why do you feel the necessity to bed the brakes in? Does it improve the braking at all?
No, we needed to do it for the preparation for tomorrow for both cars. And so we decided to do it now. Use the night tractors and
They will be put away and then brought out together, the brake pad and the disc.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, Carsten, thank you very much. And thank you very much for bringing two Porsches.
Yeah, thank you.
We really appreciate it.
I reckon they've made a rod for their own back now, Joe, to be honest, because whatever happens here, only the cars that have competed in all three parts of the Middle East swing, as it were, can win the championship. So whichever one of their cars do well here is good, but as they have got two in, they might as well take two to Dubai and then
why not
see which one's in better place for Abu Dhabi.
I think it's going to be very interesting, John, that because you've got the driver itself, Michele Di Martino and Carsten, who we were talking to there, are registered as drivers of both cars. And that leaves Tobias Müller and Moritz Kranz to do a lot of the work.
Yep.
Because these guys, we've got drive time limits on the we've got semi-pros and AMs in both of those cars, so it's going to be how they're going to work that out together. And is it going to finish, are they going to park one after 6 hours and just save that, or they've got a problem with that. They're going to have to do some, what are we going to do so that the car they get to the finish, they've got to make sure that the drivers have their required brake time, because this is a 12-hour race. The only time we don't have that is when we are on the 6-hour race.
Yes, good point. Well, by the time we get the Yas, one should say, and I'll be the one to say,
please,
as it's me that's talking, the K Kramer guys are not unused to endurance racing. You might have spotted the Porsche Endurance Trophy Nürburgring logo on Carsten's shirt there, and they run all kinds of things, GT4s and GT3s, as well as cup cars, in normally a bright orange and black colour. So that's a slightly different colourway than I'm used to seeing them. But if you want to go and take your Nürburgring permit, you can do it with them.
Wow.
Although we don't know what that's going to look like next year because of this strange issue that we've had with the circuit starting their own series to compete with the Nürburgring Langstrecke series. So we're not really sure what's going to happen there. They can give you race taxi rides on some of the tourist fahren days, the tourist driving days around there. And basically anything that you would like to do that includes the Nürburgring and the Nordschleife, they can do it. They are very well known in Germany. Oh, look, they're winding a bit of wing out of that. Need a bit more run down the straight. Can we just take it off? Is that what they were saying there? I think it was, you know.
Oh, dear.
I think they might have just been saying, take that whole thing. Take that whole thing off.
We don't need it.
Yeah, except it looks good.
It does, indeed. And it's probably got some advertising on it that they want to keep out there.
That swan neck on it, just trying to keep the airflow over the rear wing. And remember, this is I was going to say only a cup car. This is a cup car. This is not a GT3 or a GTE car. This is a cup car. Extraordinary the amount of technology that's going into these cars nowadays. And I've got to say that if I drop the Euro Millions this weekend,
yeah,
which is up to 200 million.
I'm touching wood, mate.
Yeah. Find out later on tonight.
Yep.
Then I'd go endurance racing.
Yes.
Obviously.
Oh, well.
And I think my first port of call would be this championship in a cup car, in an enduro prepared cup car, because I think you get good value for the car. And you know it's provenance. It's a Porsche, so they do endurance racing. You get good support. It's not now a new car. The 992's been running for a few years, so people know its foibles. And you hand it off to somebody like a Herbert or a Red Camel or somebody like that who's been running the cars. JTR, albeit they are more Carrera Cup, but. Joe Tandy Racing, Nick Tandy is the owner of that, and Nick, who runs the team from, another Nick, he's an absolute star. Plus, they're pretty close to me in the centre of England. Somebody like that to run it for you. A couple of decent drivers, and there we have it. And the problem now is, even as a wealthy amateur, if you want to go GT racing at Le Mans, you probably only have 16 cars to get in for the foreseeable future.
Wow.
If that, 16, maybe 18 cars, and with that, there's only two cars from each manufacturer. Have to be Pro-Am, but only two cars from each manufacturer, so you're talking 8 or 9 manufacturers for the foreseeable future at Le Mans. And so if you're a Porsche owner, driver, then there's two Manti run cars that'll have a gentleman driver in each, and that'll be it. So this is the sort of series where I'd be coming to say, well, I'm never going to get a it's pie in the sky, because even with the money, would I be good enough? I don't know, but I don't think you even bother aiming for Le Mans now, and I think that's a real difficulty that the ACO have got to address, because they've got so many hypercars.
I was so confused when that came out, of having the two from each manufacturer.
Yes.
It was like, seriously, have a look at where the grids were previously before you made that decision. And it just didn't make sense. Yes, we've got a massive field of hypercars now. And
great.
And that's brilliant. And remember, going back 15, they were all hypercars. Of that ilk, of that time. So, it's an interesting way to go. And you are correct. It's the way that this system, this championship across the continents of Europe and the Middle East have evolved. And it's evolved into something where it's really attractive to come in a cup car, which incredibly quick in a straight line.
Well, and here's another thing. Kreventnik is one of the few series now that you'll be able to see AMGs and Audi R8s racing in GT3, because they're not in the ELMS and they're not in the World Championship.
Yeah.
And not going to Le Mans. So if you are already involved with those manufacturers, where are you going to race if you can't race in ELMS? But you still want to race at the Great Circuit, so you still want to race at Spa, you still want to race at Portimao, or you still want to race at Barcelona, and you still want to do 24-hour races. Well, sorry, you can't go to Le Mans, and you can't do the World Championship, and you can't do the European Le Mans Series, because those two manufacturers aren't part of that championship. They weren't given entries. So bring your cars to Kreventnik instead.
Well, how many Audi R8s out there? I mean, we used to have grids of lots of them.
There were over 130 of the first iteration, and I think there's getting on for 100 of the second iteration if you count the Evos as well. Hey, look at the Asian Le Mans Series. Yes. That's coming back to this part of the world in February for Dubai and two races at Abu Dhabi. And I think there are five or six Audis and four or five AMGs in that. They're still winning. They're still competitive. We'll see them at Dubai 24 hours, no doubt.
Yes, indeed.
We'll see Audis there.
You'll see them at Bathurst.
We'll see them at Bathurst in February, yeah. And, you know, extraordinary that those cars won't be allowed to race.
Yeah.
And it's only it's a numbers game.
Yes, true.
It's nobody's been spiteful, and there's been no falling out between Audi and AMG and the ACO and the FIA for their championships. There's just not enough room at circuits to accommodate everybody who wants to be in. You were talking about F4 here, and difficult decisions have had to be made. But if you've got an Audi or an AMG and you want to race it, and you want to have excellent amount of track time and the ability to dial yourself in and have some great fun in a very, very professional but laid back paddock, then, you know, come and have a look at Kreventnik.
I remember talking to Gary Willens a long time ago, probably 2007, 2008, and he said, bring a car, we'll make a class for you.
Yes, yes.
And that still holds true today. Yes, they've had to mould it. And as I said, when we were doing a little bit to camera for some of the promo material that we use about 24-hour racing, they read the room correctly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And they do it.
That's because they've been in the room.
Yes.
They've been at the other side of that room. Yep. They've been drivers themselves. That's where Kreventnik came from a belief that people, just because they were running older cars or different cars or front-wheel drive cars, weren't getting a fair crack of the whip if they'd signed up for two half-an-hour races and one of them happened to be the last race of an event weekend, they would get squeezed and their half-an-hour race would become 20 minutes, then it'd be 15, and then it'd be, I'm sorry, we haven't got time to fit it in, it's the circuit curfew now.
Exactly.
And Gary and Ivo decided that there must be a better way of doing this. And they were absolutely right. And thus, Kreventnik was born. Just a moment or two ago, in the pit lane, a little bit of work going on with the Audi RS3 LMS DSG of Simpson Motorsport. Jack Lemmer had brought the car in, and therefore he hadn't had more than a lap or two, I wouldn't have thought, since Joe had spoken to him. And we'll go to Joe in a moment. Ravi Ramiid, Century Motorsport BMW, fastest in GT4 at the moment, whilst Joe Bradley has made his way to Red Camel and the bright orange Porsche in the 992 Cup class.
Well, with the 909 now being pushed back into the garage, their night practice is done. Ivo, job list complete for this evening?
Yeah, job is completed. Car is still in one piece, so now we're going to prepare it for tomorrow.
Right. There was a lot of conversation went on there at the door. You're standing there talking to your team. What was all that about?
Of course, always discussion about the setup. We made some changes before. Now we decided to go back. Not that I'm the right one to judge it, but we all have the same problem. A little bit of understeer. We put a little bit more camber on the back, and we're going to put it back. We have some discussion. What do we want to improve, the front, or are we going back to the balance of yesterday? And yesterday we had a long run, and the balance was quite good through the whole run, so we go back to the safe setup.
I mean, you're sharing the car with a superstar in the form of Rick Breukers, you know, double Daytona winner, Sebring winner. I would think he wants the car a little bit more edgy than you prefer.
Well, I don't mind that the car is edgy, but he is much better in handling that. I mean, it's. I think it's good if you can drive the car, let's say, in 105%, so you can always stay out of trouble. Always, not always. It's not that that I'm afraid the car. I will lose the car. Just I have to back off a little bit earlier than he does, apparently. Or he drives around it, and that's not what I can.
I'm not criticizing you at all. No, being as quick as Rick. All right, so small grids, but I think, because I'm in the entertainment business, Evo, so I've got to create tension and excitement. But with only four cars, there's only one car in the 992 class not going to be on the podium. You do not want to be that car.
No, correctly, and you are in the entertainment business, but we're glad you're here, but I don't think we need you to have the entertainment, because it's very close together. It's all about strategy and consistent lap times, and we are looking forward to the battle, and let's come on.
That's what it's all about. And the Middle East Championship here, three rounds kicking off here in Kuwait, Dubai, Abu Dhabi. It's quite exciting to be out in the Middle East, certainly in the European winter.
Yes, absolutely. I love it here. It's a very nice track. The facilities are fantastic. It's a very good start of the Middle East season.
Yeah, great stuff. Thank you, Ivo. I'll leave you to your debrief. Thank you, mate.
Joe Bradley and Ivo Broekers down in the pit lane. With now just 11 and a half minutes. Where has that 80 minutes gone, Phil?
I have no idea, John.
That's what I love about these sessions, whether it's Petit Le Mans, whether it's on the high banks of Daytona or the airfield at Sebring, or whether in a 3 weeks or so time around Dubai Autodrome, these night practice sessions, everybody's doing a little bit of work. It's maybe not quite as hectic. We get to talk to a lot of people down in the pit lane. We get to blether on about all kinds of things and not have to worry about what time's going in where. I'll give you a rundown of the times in a minute, actually. But it has disappeared. It has disappeared so quickly. It is the Manamauri Energy by EBI Motors, or EBI Motors, actually, as they say. Fabrizio Broggi behind the wheel of that car at the moment. 144.579, their best time. That is a considerable improvement on what we were seeing on the longer version of, slightly longer the version of the track last year.
55s, 56s, yeah. 52 was the quickest race time.
Yeah, exactly so. Then Century Motorsport and the BMW with a 44.9, the number 22 car. That's out on track in the hands of Lewis Plato at the moment. In the pit, CP Racing, 142.286, that's the third of the GT3 cars. So there, so the GT3 field is separated by 0.7 of a second. Then we have the 992 quickest car, and it's the 936 K Kramer Racing. Monty Kranz out in that car at the moment. He's lapping in a 48.1, which is very impressive. That car's best time of 47.6. 47.6 for a cup car. Around here, let's remind ourselves, second in the cup class, wrapped down by Fulgenzi, Christopher Zirkling, who we spoke to not so very long ago, with a 48.6 last time around. Third of the cup cars done for the night. Ivo Broek has brought it in. We've just heard from him, 149.3, and Carsten Kramer has also pitted the second of the K Kramer Racing. They were matching up some brake pads and rotors, pads and discs. The 937 then with a 152.7. In GTX, it's the Toro Verde, Genetta G56 Cup car. Toro Verde, Green Bull, very much in white at the moment. And Michael Simpson driving that car at the moment. That is out on the track. Second in GTX, the Razoon Northern Racing KTM Crossbow. And they've done a 48.8. And with a 49.3, just going back out again, Lionel Amarouche. I think for the first time this evening, Lionel behind the wheel of the Vortex V8, number 701. Three very different cars in that GTX category, with the Ginetta G56, the KTM Crossbow, and the Vortex 2.0. But all... all similar philosophies, yeah, because they were built to race. There's a road going Ginetta, of course there is, and there's a road going KTM as well. But the versions that we're seeing here are very much using the philosophy of let's think about the race car before we think about the race car, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
Quickly finishing off, Century Motorsport in their 429 lead GT4 from AGMC Racing. And in the TCE category, it's Vasily Vladikin, best in the Audi ahead of CWS Engineering, Colin White, out at the moment. But they're very close together, a 57.5 and a 57.9. We said we'd have a look next time the Vortex came in. Joe Bradley is down next to this all-new machine with the carbon fibre chassis rather than the steel chassis it had. And Joe, that is a significantly different-looking machine than the old car, but we can still see it's a Vortex.
Yeah, absolutely. It does keep its sort of aesthetic, sort of family heritage with the shape of the car. But that is a completely... This is a weapon. I mean, it's got a V8 Chevrolet engine strapped to you. That's like going to be like firing out of a milk bottle. It's going to be like driving a firework. This car, the Vortex 2.0. The other thing I've noticed, though, John, not so much... Yes, the car is completely different, this version too. However, look around at the team next time you're down here. Look at the amount of crew we've now got at Vortex. Look at the backdrops. Look at the back door, outside the back door, and look at the setup they've got. They've got a pit perch. They've got a crew numbering about a dozen mechanics. These guys were four guys, a picnic table and a toolbox, 3 years ago at Mugello when they brought three cars. But here we are. This is an operation that hasn't just gone into the 21st century with regard to the car design, and with the carbon fiber body-worked car.
Carbon fiber chassis now, Joe.
And the technology
carbon fiber chassis now.
It's a carbon fiber chassis, absolutely. Carbon fiber tub. It's not just about that. They've got the backup as well to run a car like this. So it's a completely different operation. Vortex, you know, they've been a stalwart of this series. They've won, I don't know how many Spirit of the Race awards just because of their endurance racing spirit of keeping going. This is a different world. It says the new Vortex 2.0 on the bonnet there, Seb. It should say the new world of Vortex. That's what it should say, because it is down here. It's very, very
defending
different.
Their team's championship as well, of course, in GTX, which tells you all about their never say die attitude. New look to their team logos, to the inside of the pits as well. It really feels to me, Phil, as if this is almost a new beginning, a new birth, but very much as Joe said, keeping the same ideals and philosophy of the original car, but just turning it up and moving it on, not just a notch. It feels like let's go version 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yes, it says 2.0. That might as well say 7.0. It feels like they've made a big jump forward here in everything, as Joe mentioned that.
I'd take the decimal point out and say it's version 20.
Version 20, yeah, it's very good.
You just see the difference in it and what it does to the crew. It lifts them. They're now playing the game of everybody else.
Yeah.
Okay, they've brought them to the CP level. It's brought them to those levels.
Now, a GTX, all right, there's only three cars of GTX here, but we've got a Ginetta, which has been around for a very long time. Yes. We know all about that G56 Cup car. We've got the latest version of the Crossbow, the GTX Crossbow. Again, that car is very well developed. This will be good practice and good development time for these guys.
Yep.
And don't forget, GTX is where we often get things like modified Lamborghini Cup cars.
Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, Huracan Cup cars, Super Trofeo cars. And they are going to have to pit themselves against the KTM Crossbow, which we know can do a job of work, which we know can be very quick. This is great for them to get ready for selling customer cars, and that's exactly what they want to do. They want to sell customer cars.
I think, John, they've gone from amateur to professional.
Yeah.
Okay, they were, you know, yes, there are a lot of amateurs racing, but their whole mental approach is now a full-on, we produce race cars, we're going to be selling race cars, this is what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. And when somebody, a customer, comes and walks into their pits now, it's a totally different experience.
The They've done a lot of work on the aero.
Yep.
Philippe Bonnel, who's been part of this, he's driven the car as well. The 6.2 Chevy V8, they're no. Pretty much everything else has changed. They've taken some inspiration. He was telling us from the RS01 Renault. I did some commentary on that series. That was a phenomenal. In fact, we had one here in the Middle East racing.
Yeah, that was racing out of.
Was that GPX?
GPX was racing. Yeah, Fabien Giroir was.
Giroir, yeah, you're
was,
right.
Was running that.
They are hoping to have two Vortex 1s and two Vortex 2s for next year. They have got two chassis in carbon already. They're defending the 24-hour series. They're doing a good job of improving year on year, and that new car looks absolutely stunning. Phenomenal. Here's the Ginetta G56 Cup car in the pits. That's very shiny and new and sporting a slightly new bodywork, which Joe Bradley was taking a close look at there. I noticed just a few changes. The most obvious one's the flared wheel arches, but under the doors as well, there's been a bit of work gone on to that, and it's a little bit more rolled and a bit more aero. Very interesting. That's not the same as the G56 Cup car that 55 and 56 that we've seen in the past and that we know well. That is just a little bit different again. So Ginetta also a little bit of an evolution, not a revolution, but an evolution. And so we'll see that car here this weekend. Lawrence Tomlinson and his son Freddie are part of the driving talent. Lawrence, the driving force behind A, saving Ginetta, and B, turning it into a real force in global motor racing, selling a lot of customer cars around the world, and they continue to have the Ginetta series in the UK and in other places too. Be the breeding ground for some good talent,
yes,
Ginetta juniors. Often the first step up for drivers coming out of karting, learning to heel and toe, learning gearboxes, learning full-size circuits. That black and white car looks good.
The first open roof car I ever drove was a G20.
G20 is a great little car.
This one had a BDA in it.
Yeah, but that was fun. But that was loud.
It was loud, and it was a lot of fun around a couple of circuits back in Australia. But yes, a great learner's car. So if you're going to move up, and lightweight, lots of power, and a whole heap of fun.
I just like the way they go about what they're doing.
Yes.
From Yorkshire towards the north of England, Yorkshire people are known as pretty no-nonsense. And if you've ever spent any time in the company of someone from what they would call God's country.
Yes.
Make a good cup of tea up there as well. And Lawrence Tomlinson is absolutely that. It's worth sitting down and talking to Lawrence. If he wants to have a chat, you listen to what he's got to say, because he's... I think it's fair to say, and I mean this in the most positive, he's got an opinion about most things, and he's seldom wrong, if I'm honest. Checkered flag is out. Lewis Plato crossing the line Lewis Plato in the pit lane. And at the end of the session, the three GT3 cars, first, second and third, there was an improvement later on in the session by the BMW of Lewis Plato. And that took that car to the top ahead of the Manamari Energy Porsche, Cosmi Papi, driving at the end. So BMW and Century Motorsport with a 143.449, a full 1.1 seconds ahead of that class-leading and session-leading car for such a long time, the Porsche 911. Remember, I said there was only 0.7 between the top three. It's now 1.8 seconds with CP and the 85 Mercedes in third. Wrapped down by Fulgenzi, lead the 992 class from Keir Kramer Racing. So that's a change as well. Christopher Zirkling just going through there. A 147.0, 147 flat, Phil, from a 992. There's Michael Simpson in the G65. He improves as well as he crosses the line underneath our feet in that white and black car. He was winding up to something, wasn't he?
Yeah.
As he took as much speed as possible onto the front straight last time. A 48 flat for the GTX best time ahead of Razoon with the KTM Crossbow, just a tenth further back. And then the Vortex in the pits a little while ago, getting Lionel Amarouche out of that car. Best of the 992s, we've mentioned Rabdan and Kay Kramer in third place, Red Camel. And in fourth, the second of the Kay Kramer Racing cars, that is the 937. Then the GT4's Century on top there, two ahead of AGMC. And in TCE, that's been going backwards and forwards right throughout this session. It stands for nothing but a bit of pride, probably, tonight at dinner. And Colin White has just pitted the Ginetta G55, the old Cup car, with a 156.7. And that was 0.8 of a second ahead of the Audi RS3, the only front-wheel drive car in the field, which Vasily Vladikin had at the front of the field for such a long time for Simpson Motorsport. A lot of different types of cars spread by, 14 seconds, but the class gaps are much, much closer than that. And it's BMW, Porsche, Mercedes, Porsche, Porsche, Ginetta, KTM, Vortex, Porsche, Porsche, then two BMWs, a Ginetta G55 and an Audi to make up the rest of the field. A lot of union flags in there for British teams enjoying the warm weather here. Brilliant stuff from all of them. My thanks go to Nick Damon and Joe Bradley in the pit lane and, of course, Phil Anson alongside me. Still to come tomorrow, of course, we have Nick's build-up and the whole of the race live from Kuwait Motor Town.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.